Welcome back to the Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and Brown aspiring and experienced professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworker, and your career. Hi, I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds. I'm an author, management consultant, and interim chair in the Management Marketing and Public Administration Department in Higher Ed. My area of research is toxic followership. That's right. Why do people follow bad people? As a workplace toxicologist, I help you to dismantle the poison people bring to work. Now, I am not alone. I have my wonderful co-host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Dr. Lonnie, take it away.
Dr. Wendy, thank you so much. Welcome back to the Access Point, everyone. It's been great. We've been back from our mid-season break. I am Lonnie Morris. I am a management professor and consultant. I spend my time helping really talented people dismantle challenging issues that make people not play so nice in the sand at work. With Dr. Wendy and I, lots of work together in research, consulting, and we collect stories of how people experience work to help other people not make those same mistakes and make work a better place. My job, what I love to do, is to help you hate your job less. This is an exciting time. I'm glad that we are here in Women's History Month. I'm glad that we are back on the road for 2024. We've got a disclaimer. I know Dr. Wendy always wants to say before I get started with my spiel. I'll let you go.
That's right, because the thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated. It's your turn.
I'm standing on business right now. What I say today is all about me. You can take that. Today we're going to talk about a few things. Some of it deals with sort of the norms of work and preparing people for workforce, preparing you for what's happening in this workforce. But a lot of it's about being a rebel in that space with some of the things that we're dealing with. And we've got an incredible guest. And I'm so excited to have with us today Dr. Tracy G. Crump, who is an award-winning educator and practicing licensed attorney who has served as a professor for more than two decades. She helps students and educators prosper by bringing clarity to their goals and resources, sharpening their skills, and empowering them to strive for success. She is the founder and chief education officer at Tracy Crump Enterprises, LLC. She writes and speaks about diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and navigating academics, among other topics. She has a new book, ACES for Student Strategies for Success in the First Year of College and Beyond, where she looks at the relationship between expression and writing and dealing with injustice, sexual harassment, and violence. Dr. Tracy, welcome to the Access Point.
Well, thank you both so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We are in for a treat. I'm excited to be here. And definitely, look at all the wonderful things we're doing right now. I'm glad that you took out some time and your schedule to talk to us. Let's jump right in, because there are a few things happening right now. And because this is our first show after our mid-season break, I want to start us out in this space. As we think about the work that you're doing in preparing college students and go and have this experience, also with professionals and academics, educators, my question as we start out for both of you is, what are some of the universal truths that we know about the current state of work, right, that we all need to understand? I'll tell you why I'm asking that. I'm looking at norms. I'm looking at what constitutes sort of pushing back against the norms, because I saw this in Fortune, top of the year, and I thought it was funny because the title of this was, I have no idea what the right rules are at work anymore. It says that people in the workplace are unsure about what does it mean to have a flexible workplace? What is okay to wear in the office or on screen? What does it mean to say I'm going to take a mental health day? And still are unsure, as we look at hybrid and remote work and in the office, how to create strong connections with people when you're across multiple locations and time zones. And unfortunately, when we look at data around this, 86% of people who were surveyed around this earlier this year, who are knowledge workers, say that the norms and expectations have shifted since the pandemic. And the managers, so more than 60% of the managers say they are struggling to help people define which behaviors make sense now. So as we talk about leading through 2024, and we're coming out of this first quarter, right? What's normal for us at work now? What do people have to take in consideration and be ready for at this time?
Thank you so much. So when we think about norms, right, norms are what we say they are. Norms are dependent upon the organization and the individual. Norms are unique to us all. So one of the first things that folks need to start doing is asking questions, right? They need to ask the employees, they need to ask the managers, they need to ask the supervisors so that they can scale what their norm is. Because what's normal for me may not necessarily be normal for another employee or a supervisor or a leader.
I love that. It makes me feel like being a rebel, and I think I'm a rebel, is okay. That's my norm. Dr. Wendy.
I think they need to ask, and I also think that we tolerate so much more now post-COVID than we have before, that the norms adjust on a daily basis. You know, it may work today because it's Friday. It may not work on any other day of the week. And it's we've gotten used to it and it's acceptable to some extent, but it really isn't tolerable for everyone. So when you think about the multiple generations, it's like, where are we in this workspace? And maybe more discussion needs to take place.
I love that, right? And so Dr. Tracy said, the norms are unique to each person. So you can figure out by asking questions, Dr. Wendy, to your employer, the people around you, but you also get a chance to establish some of those norms for yourself, right? This feels right to me. This is part of my behavior. So if we look at some more work, the workplace trends. This is always good. We look at these all the time. And it said that stress is still high, but we see that in 2024, stress is still high, and it's higher in the U.S. and Canada and many other countries. 52% of employees report they experienced very high stress the day before. When surveyed, they said yesterday was bad, right? There's a decrease in employees who feel connected to their organization and mission, and it's higher for hybrid folks than it is for on-site or people who are exclusively remote. Only 23% of U.S. employees strongly agree that they trust the leadership in their organization. I could go on all day about that one. There's a steady decline in engagement, right? So right now we're at nationally about 31% of people who employ say they feel engaged at work. 55% of the employees said they are regularly watching job postings or actively seeking jobs. And there's a steady decline in employees who feel their employer cares about their well-being. We're actually down to 22% of employees right now. So my question to both of you is, how do we buck the trends, right? How do we get away from this issue of high stress, increased engagement, and lack of trust? And so where does this fall for us on this spectrum of your purpose being associated with this work and rebelling against these trends?
Well, it seems to me, right, one of the challenges is attitude is a reflection of leadership. Right. So if leaders are disconnected from their employees, from the folks that they work with, then so too go the employees. This idea of the lack of communication in workspaces, the disconnect comes where the leadership isn't checking in with the employees, finding out what the employees need, finding out where the struggles are. There is a reason why folks are checking the job boards, not because they have nothing else to do, but because they're seeking something else. And folks who are happy, healthy, and well-adjusted at work don't necessarily check the job board. So one of the first things that we need to kind of tune into is how the leadership is being in contact with the employees and the folks who are under their tutelage.
We see a lot of that in articles now. There are a lot of things being written about how people have disconnected at work and working from home with 2 to 3 jobs, making $600,000 a year and juggling.
At least five of them.
And juggling.
I got to call you back because my second job got a call right now.
Right. So, you know, they may not be able to recognize that this employee has disconnected. They're going to smile on in a little rectangle on Zoom. They're going to show up from the waist up on Zoom. And you'll never know that soon as they're off camera, they're working somewhere else, getting paid a full salary. So it's important for leadership to stay in tune to the very people that you're working with. Just for that reason.
I love that because I actually have some clients, some coaching clients who were working. I've had experiences 3 times. We're working 2 full-time jobs in their profession that were disconnected. Organizations weren't connected in any way, but the work was very familiar to them. And they would have one job that's on the West Coast, one job that's on the East Coast. The times were different all day long. They should be saying, well, I can't meet right now. I got a meeting. No, and neither of the other employers even knew, right? But doubling their salary for 6 to 8, 12 to 18 months. And to the point here, disconnecting in a way where they were focused on self, right? So aligning with, here's the goal for me right now. I don't have to do the extra. Matter of fact, I don't have the time to do the extra with you guys anymore. I'm going to focus on this because we see so much shift, right? So much change with layoffs and all the shifts in the employment space. People said, I've got to protect me. And here's how I do that now. This is my way of building the nest for whatever may come out of this.
Yeah, the employment landscape has changed, right? Gone are the days where folks were solely committed for 20, 30, 40 years to one entity. What we see now is folks recognize that their employment relationships are reciprocal. Specifically, like Gen Z, we see millennials, and I'm going to here represent Gen X, right? We know our value, we know our worth, and we want that reciprocal relationship. So can we be loyal? Of course we can be loyal, but we also want loyalty.
Ooh, is that T-E-A? Now, loyalty. Let me have some of that. I like that. You know, I think about what you just said, Tracy, and this is really interesting because, you know, in the workplace, we are watching the multiple generations react differently to the term employment at will. That used to be beneficial for the employer. And now employees are laughing like, employment at will. See ya.
I resign effective at noon today.
Why? Because I have a stomach ache.
That's right.
Y'all have made me sick. I just talked to someone yesterday who was in banking and told me that somebody at her workplace that she doesn't particularly care for and doesn't like engaging with. And whenever this person tries to put a meeting with her, she's like, oh, I'm sick. I got to go. I don't want to bring that on to me. Right. So I just heard another client talk today, their company is about to go through another implementation of something in tech. And I heard her say specifically, I will not be here for that. Right? I'm tired of this. I'm tired of the change. I'm tired of things that come through with this. This isn't jiving with me anymore. I don't feel that connectedness to this process, to all the things that happen when we've got a buyout, all these things happen that impact us in negative ways. It's like, hey, I can get out of here. I can go do something else.
I think it's getting harder for employers to have a level of control that they used to enjoy. And I'll tell you why. Is because when they set some sort of boundaries for behavior, like if you're due at this meeting, you're expected at this meeting, and we want you to be at this meeting. And if not, X is going to happen. And while the employees are just laughing like, okay. I mean, it just doesn't have the same meaning anymore.
Yeah, X isn't as scary as it used to be. Mm-mm. Right. The generations of folks who are working now, who are in the workforce, they recognize their value. They are not coming to the workforce as we did, right, decades ago. Listen, you are offering me this amount of money. I'm just going to take it without negotiating. Now, new employees are negotiating everything. So they're a little bit more savvy with regard to how they feel about their space that they're occupying in their place of employment. They want to know that they are valued. They want to value the work they do, but they also want that respect.
So I want to continue with this, really looking at the skills people need to help navigate some of this space. And part of this is connected to a study you just had come out, Dr. Tracy, in the Journal of Creative Education, right? Looking at non-cognitive skills and why that's important. There's also what I see, there's some connection to, when we look at these lists, and our producer talks about this all the time, of the top soft skills in demand for 2024. And I just saw this in Forbes about 2 weeks ago. And there's a connection, right? Forbes list says you need negotiation, persuasion, mentoring, resilience. Your list, when we look at non-cognitive skills, talks about self-efficacy, ethics, emotional intelligence, grit, self-discipline, conflict management. So take us through what's the significance of non-cognitive skills help us navigate this changing, or as we just discussed, changed landscape in the employment space?
Yes. So non-cognitive skills take us beyond, right, the SAT scores that we need to get into a place, right? Non-cognitive skills carry us through the challenging times. And I'm not sure of your experience, but my experience is, in many instances, I needed to lean on, in some cases, be propped up by my ability to navigate my non-cognitive skills, whether it was dealing with workplace aggression, including microaggression, whether it was feeling isolated, feeling that spotlight effect, like because I am one of the only, if not the only, in certain spaces, that the spotlight is on me and I need to perform in the way that is consistent with the norms of my agency. So when we talk about non-cognitive skills, these are the skills that we need to navigate those nuances of the workspace and of our social spheres.
I like the fact that those skills don't just come with anything, like you said, that's tied to the SAT, that's tied to education. It's experience. And we need not to dismiss our Gen Zs who gained this skill, right, throughout that walk and in the workspace. And I'll give you an example. I was in a restaurant, an eating establishment that everyone loves to go to. I will not name it. And it was slow as molasses. I was just the third person in line. And honestly, I thought I needed to go back there, slaughter the chicken, take the feathers off, you know. It was just the slowest. And everybody was working, though. When I looked back there, no one was sloughing off. I mean, everybody was hustling. And my greeting was, we don't have chicken. We don't have guacamole. We don't have this. We don't have that. How may I help you? And I said, okay, thank you. And I really had to think. And so I went ahead and placed my order. As slow as they were, in walked someone else with this big personality. Give me this. I want that. Just bust the line. I didn't say anything because it really didn't matter to me. I had just stood in line for 20 minutes, right? And if this is important to you, I'm going to let you do that. And the young people didn't like that. The Gen Zers was like, no. And so this person was absolutely belligerent towards the young people who were on point with customer service, no matter how bad it was. And I thought, wow, what a skill. I think, I don't know if I was that polished at that age. And they really handled it. And the woman said, "Are you a manager?" And he said, "No." She said, "Go get your manager." And while the manager, while he went to go get the manager, I said, "You know what?" I said, "Hey, sis." And she looked at me. I said, "It's not their fault. They're handling business." And she said, "I'm trying not to get a ticket. I'm parked illegally." And I said, "But that's not his fault." And so, right, but I'm telling every one of those young people, they got together to try to help her get out of there quickly because they didn't want this mess. They were already stressed. And so I paid for her meal. I said, "Really, honestly, let me just do this." And she said, because they weren't taking cash, she said, "Here's the cash." I said, "I don't want it. I'm just doing this for you." And she said, "Here, I want you to have it." I said, "Give it to him." And then she just looked all shocked. By that time, Gen Z had attitude like, "Nah, you have messed everything up." And I said, "Son," I said, "take it and say thank you." He barely said thank you because he was angry at all the things, with all right. She treated him terribly, but he held every one of those young people were excellent with customer service. And she walked out and she turned around and she said, "You made this a win-win for everybody." And I just smiled. Yeah, I just smiled. And so we need to think about how those skills are developed in some of the worst situations. In some of the worst situations, because I almost backed up. She said, "Maybe it's my tone." I said, "It is. Yes, it is. I'm just
Tone
trying
and
to tell you. Right, your demeanor. You
your
bust
tone and your
the
parking.
line." You bust the line. And so the fact that I was able to find some way to thank them for the soft skills that were far more important in a situation like that. That if we go in any job situation and look at that, because people make fun if you want to develop a training for soft skills and help people develop in that area. And it isn't funny at all. It can make or break a business.
It
That's important.
definitely can. And when you think about in that instance, that situation that you had, it took a lot. It took grit, resilience, persistence, and empathy in
Here
the
you go.
face of, right, an attack. So, like, I don't think Gen Z, I don't think millennials get enough credit for being able to navigate those spaces in the
I
way that
agree.
those spaces. Are they, right, boisterous? Will they tell you where to go and how long to take to get there? Of course. But it is because they have developed these nuanced skills that allow them to not only empathize with your situation, but to also understand their own situations, their own self-identity, their own expectations, and then to present that in a way that lets us all know where they stand.
Exactly.
But we're gonna
Exactly.
definitely need those skills for this next part, right? So I want you to take this foundation that we're building about pushback, norms, and now specifically about these non-cognitive skills, the soft skills you mentioned, Dr. Wendy, that we have to train on, that we know organizations are looking at now and prioritizing. Because I want you to help us figure out how do we use that, how do we apply that. Unpack what's happening in Florida right now. Two things to bring up. So first, we know we just saw this last Friday. Florida started with what was the something about the woke law, right? Where they had this law about you can't do these things, but we saw that the appellate court said that part of that law is unconstitutional, violates the First Amendment. So part of it said that employers could not force employees to go to trainings on topics such as race, color, sex, national origin, or anything that puts someone else as morally superior to others, or that identifies people as inherently racist or sexist or oppressive by virtue of race, sex, or anything that makes people feel guilty about the things that their ancestors. Can we pair that with this law where they've banned certain other things? And now we saw the Yeah, so just today I saw this, but I think it happened earlier this week, like on Monday. University of Florida, right? So the largest public institution in the state has now, because of this law that prohibits the state's public colleges and universities from using any state funding, even private funding, on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. So they now have closed the office of the chief diversity officer, eliminated all of the DEI positions and appointments, halted all funding for DEI-focused contracts, and so they're redirecting all that diversity, equity, inclusion money to faculty recruitment. So my question for you is, we're standing on these non-cognitive skills that help you stop the lady from busting the line and parking her car out. How do we use that in this space? Because it's not just the Gen Zs and the millennials and Gen X. We all need some skills to deal with this, because I'm not just thinking about what's happening in Florida, but also how this spills over across our country.
You know, this is a pretty interesting discussion, and I think we do need to have the discussion. First and foremost, why? Right? Why don't we want a holistic understanding of our multicultural global society? If we all continue to operate in silos, if we all continue with the foundational understanding that is incomplete, that is misdirected, in some cases misrepresented intentionally, then we can't move forward. And so in spaces such as this, we need to have those important conversations. I believe there was a book, Crucial Conversations, if you will, that allowed us to have these discussions where tensions are high, right? In many cases, the content is hugely important and the outcome matters. We need to come to the table. You can do away with the funding. You can place restrictions on discussing the topics, but the problems and the issues aren't going to go away. So until we come to this reckoning space where we all can have these brave conversations, we're going to continue to run the hamster wheel. We're going to continue to have folks feeling disenfranchised, other folks feeling unheard and not moving forward. And that's not helpful to any of us, specifically those of us who come from underrepresented groups, under-resourced communities, communities that don't have the ability to exert their agency. And so therefore, we're going to continue to have kind of this tension in the workplace and in social spheres.
Yeah. Which brings us to how we're going to have to act, right? Meaning that we're going to have to be courageous in the workspace, that it's going to take courage, because standing up for not only us, but people who are not in the underrepresented, right? They need to stand up for those who are facing challenges, right? For those who are facing injustices, not just us. Courage is going to have to come from both sides of the table. And so it means taking a stand. So whether you're in a formal leadership role or not, we're going to have to do that, because if you're going to build a career path, you're going to have to take a stance at some point in time to just totally eliminate the very thing that brings people together, is to suppress and oppress a people all over again, just for selfish reasons of a perceived superiority. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take courage for us to overcome that. And that means standing up for what's right, whether you're in a leadership role or a follower role, right?
I love this, and I want to add something I haven't shared quite widely or publicly, but I'm going to share it with the Access Point audience and with the two of you, Dr. Fish and Dr. Wendy. It is for this very reason, particularly with this show being called Rebel Without a Cause, that I'm going back to Florida, right? I lived in Florida, gosh, probably more than a decade, almost 2 decades ago, but I'm going back. When I saw these things happening, I said, somebody who understands, somebody who has the non-cognitive skills, Dr. Tracy, somebody who has the courage, somebody who knows how to navigate this to be there. I can't be the full savior, but I say, oh, that's the place that's calling me now. Mm. The work is necessary. can't stay in a safe space because I have the courage. I got to go somewhere right. where the courage is needed to help the people right. who won't stand up for themselves.
That's right. Stand up for
themselves. So, I'll be back. Sort of, I'm coming. So if you're listening out there,
he's on his way.
I'm coming.
Well, that professional courage takes means that you're making a bold choice, right? Yeah. That's what it means, that you have made this decision to do what's right, not for just me, but for the collective, in the best interest of all. Who's going to benefit from this? Not just you, not just your family, but all. Because all the research points to the fact that whenever diversity shows up in a room, creativity, right? Come on, what else? What else shows up? All of those spaces are valuable, right? Whenever diversity shows up, it's only a group, and we'll see that it's not everybody. It's just that those bold moves have such an impact. It's just like Jim Crow. For years, we had to fight our way out of that. But it was a few people that made a law, and we still, in spite of that, were very progressive people.
Oh. I didn't know he's going to take me back to Jim Crow, but okay, I'm with you on that.
Look, you're going back to Florida.
I wasn't frightened.
When you going back to Florida, I'm going to need you to know. Tracy, tell him.
Indeed, you better brush up on the new Jim Crow.
New Jim Crow. That's so right. In light of Women's History Month, I think it's definitely necessary to talk about the path for women amidst this chaos and confusion. So I saw this early last week, and it was on greenmoney.com. It comes out of a public equity firm. But they're talking about inequity for women in this space. And I think it's speaking directly about public equity, but I think it applies across a bunch of spaces, right? So that there's gender-based inequity, violence, harassment for women in commerce, economics, social systems. We can probably add all of the other things to that list. And they want to encourage the public equity space. And I'm thinking, again, we're going to take some latitude here and say most organizations, employers, to create inclusive systems around this, right? So we just talked about with Florida. There's a few things here. But they talk specifically about looking at your value chain. So it's not just looking internally, right? So we're actually talking about workplace operations. So the leaders, the employees, if there's representation, looking at what benefits look like, compensation, health, safety, well-being, but also about your supply chain practices. So think about that in education space, in the law space. So what does that mean? How relationships are impacted between suppliers and beyond and vendors, the product and the service marketplace. So the participants, how they are directly or indirectly impacted by manufacturing, design, development, and communities. I love this, right? How are communities directly or indirectly impacted by what you feel are your community-focused activities? And so I raise that in connection with the things we're talking about, also because when we look at the fight against DEI, what we also saw in February in U.S. News and World Report is that Black women particularly struggle to find their way when DEI is under attack. Right? Because they talked to a few execs. The conversation I appreciated the most was speaking with the now former chief of diversity, equity, and inclusion at Instagram. But the first one, no longer there, felt supported, but like the leaders weren't willing to go all the way. Mm. Supported, but they don't really want this. And you mentioned this earlier, Dr. Fish, about being the only, right? And that anybody who's in a space where you were the only, particularly Black women, we talk about those issues every day. In my circle, I got to talk about it every day because otherwise it just drives you crazy. So in the context of Black, of Women's History Month and the issues we're saying about creating inclusive spaces for women across the value chain and putting that against how we're experiencing this backlash with DEI, what's the path for our women right now?
Yeah, you know, the path is one of representation. Employees can understand when something is meaningful and when it's performative, right? Just because the little blurb on your website says, we champion, right, DEIBJ, I'm going to add justice in there because, right, we need that, doesn't necessarily mean it's reflected in the institution. So employees, right, they look to the top to see if the top is representative, to see if the folks in, right, the C-suite, are they diverse? Do they have a voice at the table that champions the causes of, since this is Women's History Month, women's challenges, women's issues, things that are important to women? Are the people who are in managerial and supervisory roles, are they representative? Do they have mentorship opportunities? I have been in so many spaces. So, right, the degrees I have, there aren't too many folks that have both of, all of them, right? And so I seek out special opportunities for mentorship. I want someone who not only understands my professional path, but like my personal experiences and how that shapes and molds the initiatives that I care about. And when I don't have an organization that's able to give me mentorship or provide me in a directive way to someone who can help me with my mentorship, that's problematic for me. That shows me that the organization isn't holistically vested in kind of my needs and my wants and my desires. So what we're going to need to start to do as folks who are in leadership, and then also as folks who are in employee roles who don't necessarily have leadership responsibilities, we're going to have to champion the needs and wants of folks who have our similarly situated vested ideas and needs in the workspace.
We as women are going to have to also think about how much of that are we going to put up with? We have to make some decisions. How much are we going to fight? You know, when do we stop? When do we realize enough is enough? When do we decide to take what we've learned and move on? That it isn't worth our life. It isn't worth our sanity. It isn't worth our health. And move the needle a little bit and let someone else come behind you. I love what you said, and I think totally, my personality is that I would be the one to go all the way. But everybody isn't like that. And I think for women, we need to think about how much of that is our personality that's going to sustain us. Because it is a challenge. Not yeah. only is it the employer, like you said, the website doesn't match what my experience, what I'm experiencing here. They said this was this wonderful place, and that's not my experience. And you see that, and you're experiencing that. How much of that are you going to put up with? Or do you say, I have enough in my pocket, I can move to the next level, but I want to make sure that I share this information. So we need those spaces to talk sister to sister so that yeah. it's real when the next person walks in, the next woman walks in and says, you know what? I belong in that C-suite. What is it going to take? Well, here's what you're going to have to do. You go in with your mentor, you go in with your personal board of directors, you go in with your sponsors, knowing this is what you're going to need. Go in with that, understanding that this is what it's going to take to get there.
And then we need to be able to right, conclusively say when enough is enough. Right. I am also that person who will go to the mat for myself and for those who are coming up behind me and standing right next to me. But at some point, I love the fact that you brought up the health disparities. Right. At some point, when are we trading time? Right. For this initiative? When are we decreasing the quality of our life for trying to get something going at our employment spaces? And so we do need to start thinking about when enough is enough.
And we can also remember that during the, okay, we're on the heels of Black History Month, but Black History is every day in our households. And we know that during Jim Crow, we excelled in everything. We had our own Black Wall Streets. We had our own businesses. We didn't need the FDA and no one else to come and tell us how to keep our kitchen clean, because we were baking cakes and selling them.
Yes.
And people were buying them. It didn't stop us from owning our own cleaners, fish markets, right? It didn't stop that. It didn't stop us from having our own businesses like dentistry in our homes. Where I grew up, you know, there were two dentists. I can go to the left and go to Dr. Waters. I could go to the right, two houses down. It was, you know, Dr. Trice. We had all that in our community. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the fight, think about the fight. How much is too much? And yeah. When do we give it up and do our own thing as well? Entrepreneurship, yeah, that's taking a risk. It's a good risk.
Yeah. And I love that because it speaks to this idea of the rebel, right? And the rebel without a cause, but there is a cause. And we're seeing historically how it plays out and how it manifests for us right now. And so my final question around this, and I think this is a really cool place to tie this bow on here. If you're going to be that Dr. Wendy, that Dr. Tracy, or even that Dr. Lonnie, say, hey, I'm going to come in, I'm going to move the things beside me, behind me. how do you do that in a way that makes sense and that protects you, right? So I just asked company, you know, somebody, sometimes it's just the novelty of the title that gets my attention. And it says, six ways to shine in the workplace, just six ways to shine as a workplace rebel and not be a jerk. But my question to you, I'm going to tell you what they said, and I'm going to tell you my question to you. One, get your energy from solving the problem for the people that need it. Two, set a scale of ambition that makes following the idea worthwhile. So it's about solving problems that matter. Three, have a compelling story with vivid imagery. And I think Dr. Wendy, you speaking to Jim Crow, helps us with that, right? Remember what that looks like. To help people get what's happening, build a movement behind your ideas with allies and advocates, be humble so that let others be part of the success. And this last one says, don't wait until someone asks you. So my question to you ladies on the tail of this is, can Black and brown people be taken seriously as rebels in the workplace? What does it look like for us in the context of that list?
Absolutely. Period. Full stop. Right.
Boom. And there you have it. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
For centuries, right, yeah. We have persevered. We have gone through it all, and we have come over, right, shining. Listen, when we talk about non-cognitive skills and I understand people say they are soft skills, but they are skills that if they are harnessed properly, they can carry us through anything. If we think about what you just said in the research, right? Essentially, what was being said was identify a goal, right? Bring forth your village in the form of allies, get them vested in that idea, coalesce your resources, understand your capacity, and continue to improve, right? Whether it is through professional development.
I'm ready to march right now. I'm ready to march. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do it.
It is creating employee resource groups, creating those brave spaces where we can challenge the norms and where we can work out issues that we're having that fundamentally change and shape our workspaces. We need to do that. So yes, absolutely. Black and brown folks can not only do it, but do it very well.
Dr. I'm Wendy,
just,
your thoughts.
I'm just going to say amen.
That's it, right? That's all we need on that.
I'm just going to say amen to all of that. Yes.
So when we think about this whole spectrum of norms and new norms and aligning your purpose with that stuff and being a rebel in this space, I think we learn some important things in this conversation. For employees, norms are unique to us all. So yours may be different from someone else's. And figure out what that means and how they align with the organization. Employment relationships are reciprocal. So we're coming into the space wanting to give something, but also wanting to receive something. I love when you pose this question, Dr. Tracy. Can we be loyal? Yes. But can we get loyalty? Ah, there we go, right? We got to keep that in mind. Consider why. I love this as a foundational element. Why would an organization or a person not want to have a holistic understanding of something as critical as how people are different? That's a question you need to understand for yourself. You need to pose for yourself as you're thinking about where you step into to work and to collaborate. How much are you willing to put up with? I'm not going to answer that for y'all. My answer is very different. I'm definitely on the rebel side of this coin. And then Dr. Wendy said, are you baking your own cakes and selling them? There's some work to be done. There's a market for those skills. There is a community that will embrace the non-cognitive and the hard skills. For leaders and managers, what we know is that if the leaders are disconnected, and so is the work. We know the research shows us this. Research shows us from practitioners that when people are disconnected, it's primarily because of their boss, right? The boss is always an issue, which is why we research issues about bosses all the time. Are you finding out what people's struggles are? If you are just navigating without understanding, without a roadmap, you aren't really helping. You're actually exasperating the problem. What are the non-cognitive, we talked a lot about this, right? Because we got good research out on this. The non-cognitive skills, what are those skills that we are curating as a leader and developing in our people that are significant? We talked about things like grit and persistence and empathy. We wonder if managers and supervisors and leaders are empowering people to take what they need and move on. That you don't have to be here forever. And we know that multiple generations right now are not into that. And I'll tell you, and Dr. Wendy knows this, there's only one place that I've been more than 3 years, my entire career, 25 years. But hey, okay, I got what I needed. I'm ready to roll out. here's one. Critical. Soft skills are not soft. Let's be clear. Soft skills are not soft. The examples we listed today show us that these are critical foundational skills we need to navigate everyday life and save businesses from going crazy and to keep me from acting up in the workplace. Somebody got to be able to handle Dr. Lonnie. Somebody got to say, hey, I know how to calm him down. He need to hear this song right now. For groups and teams, how are you leveraging all these skills we talked about for the people in your work group and your team? Because we need a community. And sometimes the people who are around us help us corral those into something that's bigger. Are you creating a reckoning space to hold people accountable, but also to take the rebels and match them with the new norms, right? Here's the direction that we need. Here's how we identify the real issues we need to solve and where we want to put our energy. Be sure to hone courage in your workplace for those people who don't have it on their own, who can't stand up to the injustice, who have barriers that create them, that impede them from taking on those challenges. From organizations, what we know is that organizations, we know that norms are what we say they are. Just because you got it on this list of rules don't make it a norm. Our behaviors create the norms, not your policy. Happy, healthy employees, Dr. Tracy said, are not checking job boards. Let's be real. If you are doing your work to create a space that is safe for people to operate and function, don't need to go nowhere else. Employees understand, and we know this, but organizations sometimes forget this, but employees understand representation versus performative actions. And I've called a few out on consulting trips going, hey, I see this great diversity statement. As I look around the room with all 12 people and 11 men and 10 of them are white, prioritize mentorship. Dr. Tracy reminded us that when we bring not just the non-cognitive skills, but the credentials to a space that help shift how we work, how we innovate, how we create, and how we open up opportunities for others, those people who are pouring in because of what they brought to the space need to be poured into as well. So as you create opportunities and openings for people, you also have to create a path for them to be whole. I want to ask you, as we always do, as we wrap up our conversation, Dr. Tracy, Dr. Wendy, if anyone is listening to what we're talking about right now and they decide to not heed these lessons, what is the Black and Brown tactic they pick? Dr. Tracy.
A to Z. Alienation, burnout, confusion, discontentment, enervation, frustration, guilt, helplessness, insecurity, jeopardy, knackering, limitation, mismatch, neglect, opportunity cost, passionless, qualms, regret, stagnation, trepidation, underperformance, vulnerability, wasted potential, xenophobia, yearning, and being zapped.
Well, damn.
Yeah. And you can play that back again. If you didn't get that, play that back one more time.
There we go. That was powerful.
That was so powerful. Thank you, Dr. Powerful. Tracy. That's everything right
That's
there.
Everything.
Yes.
Right there.
You know, I think if you don't have a goal and a purpose when you join an organization and set foot in there, you get caught up. You can get caught up in the fight and never know, it's your fight. Is it your fight? You have to figure that out. How much do you fight? Right? And you can be losing the whole time. If you don't know what your goal is, your purpose for going in there, you can get caught up. And that is the danger. And all of those that are listed from A to Z show up every day, everywhere you go. It is up to you to determine how much, how long is it worth it.
And the only thing I'll add to this, because both of you have already have contributed everything. There's one thing that's left in my mind. If you don't heed any of this, then you are stuck in this fallacy that there is such a thing as a rebel without a cause. That does not exist. Does not exist. That thing that's in your stomach, that's in your gut, that's telling you this is not right, you're right. It's not right. You might be the only person who thinks that right now in that space. Doesn't mean you're wrong. If it feels like it's not right for you, it is not right. So if you don't consider these things, then you run the risk of the hamster wheel of thinking it's everybody else and not me. You can live in that space. You can be the rebel. Thank you for joining us on the Access Point. We always discuss a lot, and we want to keep this conversation going. You can listen to the Access Point wherever you get your podcast. Remember to like, share, comment, and subscribe. If there's something you want to let us know, you can always use the hashtag TAPReflections to get with us, and you can check us out on Flipboard, right? Flipboard.com/TheAccessPoint. Dr. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Wendy, it's always a pleasure to be here with you. Good night. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Good night.